Hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And I'm joined today with Jonathan Bilal, who has got an amazing Kickstarter project which launched just a couple of days ago. And Jonathan, please say hi and introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for receiving me this morning. Yes, so we launched an amazing project called Wuxia the Fox. It's a storytelling project that combines a printed illustrated book with an iPad app that works together to tell a story. Basically, when you're going to read the book, the iPad will listen to your tone and your rhythm and adjust dynamically the soundtrack and the sound effect. And you will also see in the book some augmented reality features of the book that will be able to trigger scenes and other augmented reality layers to make the kids and the parents play together in that kind of intertwine stories. So I'm coming from the web and the cinema field. For about 10 years now, I've started about 7 to 8 startups. I've always been a kind of creative techie, trying to teach people what I was learning about the human behavior and the way that we use technology. I've always been fascinated by how usage give meaning. And the more I was working with that project, because it's been a very long road for me, that project, that Wuxia project. It's been 8 years of dream recollection. I wanted to write a project based on my dreams. They were really vivid, and they were, let me just at least tell you the basis of the story, maybe.
Yes.
The story is like, the story is like, the whale songs on Earth hold the key to dreams for humans, but the Earth's climate is changing, and the whales have decided to migrate to the planet Jupiter. And without them, there will be no more dreams on Earth. Humans will not be able to dream if the whales quit Earth. So then, a 8-year-old Oremia, which is a little girl, has vivid dream, a recurring dream of that great whales, and she's now convinced that she's originating from Jupiter. Then one day she meets Wuxia, a little young fox with some telepathic powers that just lost his family, which has been brutally driven out of his home by a sinister army called the Juning. And the Juning army is exactly what Kevin Kelly is calling the Technium, or Joël de Rosny is calling the Cyscientist, is internet-based consciousness. And we are in about 2060 when I'm talking in my project, so it's a little far future.
Right.
With no time to lose, this army will try to control the planet after a failed climate cooling project. But Wuxia and Oremia, they will reach together in a search for a legendary whale, Neoma, that hold a secret that they could allow Oremia to become a human again. So they set forth on a very thrilling quest. They will encounter many kinds of characters and hilarious friends. And there's no more ice on Earth. So among their powerful allies, there will be a Garuda of the penguin who will carry them across a melting glacier, and they will meet Aleika, the equivalent of Gandalf in my story, called Aleika, is a rabbit wizard who will protect them with some of his magic power. And if you go on the Kickstarter, which is about funded about 10% right now, we are about 100 backers after 2 days, we really reached right now the trigger, because the story is telling the story of the wonders of nature that disappeared and will disappear. It's really about the climate era. It's a fable for the ice. It's a fable for the age we live in right now. The ice is melting, and it will create a change in our cognition. I invented that, but it might actually really happen. And when I was working on the story, I was trying to see what children in the future need to learn. What my kid will need to have as courage to understand that planet Earth is no longer viable. So they have to learn about listening, self-expression, lucidity, awareness, perseverance. I wanted to go back to the 70s, where they had amazing story for children, really intense story, but really deep philosophical meaning. So along the way, Oremia and Wuxia, they will come across a very special musical device, and that's where the fun starts. 8 years ago, 2005, I hear about something called the iPad that Apple is working on. I see some sketch appearing in some darknet, And I'm thinking about, oh my God, will one day we'll be able to sketch our finger on a screen? And I was seeing Microsoft Surface big tables, and I was sure that one day I would be able to do a book that would interact with such a tablet. What I had in mind was not yet clear, but I knew that there would be a very big shift in how people read. So this musical device, I called it the Tonally. It's fallen from the sky long ago, and it came from a spaceship, 25,000 years old spaceship in the space, that recorded all history of humanity and space. So it recorded many sounds from many cultures, many languages that disappeared over time. It recorded all the animal that disappeared. It recorded all the climate sounds and everything. It's a very mysterious musical device. But once unlocked, this device reads the story with you. So basically, if you're a father and you read the story, the Tonally will be a companion. And it will be like, you know, though, I don't know if you had this in your childhood, but those kinds of book where you have a little clutch, a little bell that rings to tell you to turn the page.
I don't know.
So I had this in my childhood. So basically you have a book, you read the page, and when you hear the little bell ringing, you turn the page. So This kind of approach will lead them, Wuxia and Oremia, to use the Tonally to find Neoma and save her. So basically it's to put the reader in the story. So the Tonally itself, this instrument, why did I wanted to have a combination of a physical book and a iPad?
Yeah.
The real explanation is cognition, the children cognition. Most children learn about world and reality using their hands. Like in it, the brain maps of the body, like the body of the human is mainly concentrated in the hands and the lips, because that's the organ that we use to discover the world. So the kid basically apprehend reality with his hand until 8 years old, like really intensively. The outer right. games are with his hand. So I needed to use tactility and physical apprehension of the fingers, and not just the iPad. I was watching my kid, 2 years old, playing with my PlayStation and playing with my iPad, and I say, it would be sad if my kid would not play with a book. Because a book is a really different experience of reality and of lecture. It's a really different, more meditative and really more contemplative than an iPad, which is extremely exciting for children. So I wanted to balance that act, because I don't want my kid to be too excited when I go to bed. So when I built it Tonally, I made sure that there would be forgotten sounds of nature and symbols that would be able to trigger something in the reader to go back to the book. And back and forth. So the book, there would be a map sometime in there would be an illustration of a map in a book, and there would be some wooden blocks, wood tiles, that would be marked with symbols, very interesting symbols, very archetypal symbols that are visually enticing and mysterious, that the kid would place either randomly or either by following the instruction. And by using the iPad and watching that scene, that combination, it would trigger, for example, an instrument, a musical instrument would pop up, and then you'll be able to play music with a character. Or you would find your way in front of a forest with a fox sleeping, and what you have to do to wake him up is to sing with your parent a little song, a very specific song that we're going to grab the tone, the right tones, a bit like GarageBand or stuff like that when you sing. And it corrects your tone. So we're going to watch some frequency to see, oh, they are on the right frequency. wake up the fuck. So in the challenge we had is avoid the children to be enslaved by technology.
Yeah.
Show the true poetic potential of technology. I think we need to embrace technology rather than fear it, but we also need to tame it. We need, as humans, to start creating experience that, yes, a big, strong technological part of Wuxia is the iPad app, but it means nothing if you don't read, and it means nothing if you don't have a moment with your kid. So the voice recognition is the biggest challenge, phonetics, recognizing phonemes. The semantic part is not really the critical part. It's really understanding where he is in the story. For example, I'm telling you a story, and the soundtrack will stop if I stop talking. So I stop talking and I hear dun, 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 and then I start talking again. Dun, 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 and then I just can't imagine how much fun I will have to find this, and also how much cries I will have to endure to find the right balance of this. But the idea is that the kid will also find its way in that, and he might also learn new ways to talk, because if he meets some characters and he needs to call them so they start talking, he will develop speech. And if he develops speech in an earlier stage, then he develops a little more cognition about how to name things and also how to interact relationally with them. So he will develop his own story. It will not be a literal 3D kind of sketchy animated film, what I'm doing. I want to leave imagination to the kid. So
yeah,
there will be a lot of stuff that will happen in the Sonoros musically that will give this child enough material so he can continue his own story after reading, which is the role of music. Because even in film, 80% of emotion is music.
Yeah.
So the music will have a big part. So balancing immersion and interaction will try to play on different skills. I want to pinpoint some stuff about the reader's benefit. I want to trigger... Is it okay what I'm saying, Robert?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Yeah, I've just let you go on because I think that I think it's fascinating. No, continue.
So, it's really a focus on like helping, because I see the pain is really reading. People, I see some study going on. They don't read as much as I thought on the iPad. There's actually a stale movement right now, and I think I know why. Is that reading is a contemplative experience. And that the iPad is an exciting experience at some point. It's not really relaxing for the eyes. Even if we dim it and we use a Kindle, it's not the same experience as a tactile paper. Like the reflectivity of the paper is really different, and it has a relationship with your eyes that I cannot really explain here on the podcast. But multiple intelligence, what I mean by that is I want to tap into verbal linguistic. I want the child to meet very various characters that speak very... a lot of different language, even disappeared ones, because kids until 8 years old, they can learn as many languages as you want. It's proven that child that start learning language from 3 to 8, they can learn 5, 6, 7 language like very, very more easily than an adult, because the plasticity of the brain is extremely, extremely intense. Logical, mathematical, it's not going to be a very mathematical kind of game. Neither story, but there will be a musical instrument, and music is extremely mathematic. So
yeah.
I will bring the child into logical mathematic intelligence challenge so they can master and improve their memory, concentration, creativity, and imagination. I will use gestures. For example, they will discover some old symbols from the past civilization, and some of those symbols will be gesture that you can put on your iPad. So the iPad is going to be a kind of surface where you can start sketching, develop your visual thinking and your musical rhythmic, because you know the finger is also the rhythmic part of your brain. So connecting those, I'm sorry if it's a long story short, but connecting this important fact that cognition is linked to the end of the child, making sure that music has an important key role to play in that whole narrative, making sure that the visual in my story are not literal, but rather metaphorical, so that the child can close the book and have his own story getting built, and have the parent getting inspired to become himself a storyteller. Because when I was practicing with my child, it was really important that after I finished my story, she would propose her own version. If she didn't, it was a failure. And seriously, the reason I decided to really push that project is that my child was always asking me, tell me the story of Wuxia. And she was asking me not by telling me the story of Wuxia. She was starting the story of Wuxia, and she was asking me to continue it.
And how old is your child, Jonathan? Like, what's the sort of target age range for the experience?
It starts to be reasonable at 4. because at four, yeah, they really start asking a lot of why question. I started with I'm a bit, I'm a geek dad, so I started really early with her. But but at three, she was starting to really getting interested in the story. At four, she really started to tell me parts of the story. She really started to incarnate some characters. She really started to do role play, which is very hard to do with a book. And just to close on that, is at four, they do a lot of role play to kind of understand the difference between their illusion and between the fantasy and reality. They do a lot of role play, and they start to learn roles and social, like social stance. And yeah, and the social identity is also starting to get structured at that age. So having an iPad is useful because I can make, for example, adaptative lecture based on the age of the reader. Because I cannot really do that with one book. There was something that really triggered me in 2006. I saw in the Japanese market, I was looking at what was the best way to tackle the reader's market in Japan. And someone told me, oh, it's not the apps or any kind of PC program. It's cards game.
Oh.
And it's really big in Japan. And actually, it's big because it's a social activity. And
you mean cards like sort of, you know, the Gathering or whatever it is, you know, like these kind of role-play type card games.
Role-play cards. And I was like, oh, I'm not really a role-play person, but I realized that all kids are. And I remember that when I was a kid, I really worked a lot with those visuals. How do you call that? Hero quest, where you are the hero of the story. And
yes.
So, like, I was fascinated by how I could include cards recognition or object recognition. So instead of just using the iPad as an iPad and the book as a book, I was like, okay, so let me introduce a third level, like physical object, like any physical object, a mask. The father is wearing a mask. There's four tribes in Wuxia, the Juning, the Yod, the Kagyu, and the Noesia. So let's say I take the mask of the Kagyu, which is the lineage of the people from the earth. The Noesia is the lineage from the people from the water. The Yod is the people from the air and the cosmos. And the Juning is really the people of the machine. And I'm not afraid to say that there's a kind of message in my storytelling about we're now leaving the information age and soon we'll enter the sensor age. So there's a kind of prophetic slash visionary kind of an introspection about where are we going with technology and how much do we want to control it rather that she controls us. And it's really a philosophical quest. It's not a deterministic kind of apocalyptic tale. It's really hopeful. But it's hopeful in the sense that we're going to lose a lot of things that we've placed on Earth.
And what is the sensor age? I mean, how do you define that?
The what?
The sensor age. You said we're leaving one age and we're now going...
The internet got introduced to us, you know, maybe 35 years, 40 years ago, like to a very mass consciousness, and we started using it, but we're still using it, I would say, like people in a stadium clapping hands together, shouting a lot of message, generating a lot of data in the social networks, but we're not really understanding the story we're telling ourselves yet. It's a really abstract experience so far, almost psychedelic, where we don't even understand how far this thing will go and how far is it sustainable. It's just like ever growing and ever expanding and ever accelerating. The sensor age is really different. Do you remember in the 80s, we would see a lot of wires about the internet. There was modems. I would know that, like, if we go even back in the, let's say, 1640, when the first plumbing pipes were installed in house, we were seeing them in the walls. They were not hidden. Then we got in control of them and we hidden them. Then electricity came in about 1900. It was visible. The wires were even on the walls, tacked to the walls. And then we were able to master electricity, control the dangers, and then hide it. Same thing for domotics. Same thing for smoke detectors. Same thing for Wi-Fi. But now the sensor is really more, I think, an industrial revolution that was kind of planned, I almost say prophetized But
yeah,
it's almost if the object and the material reality wants to be aware of itself. So we basically have all the tools right now to make all objects locative. So we can install narrative on any objects, any physical object on Earth. What I mean by narrative is I can give a little triggerable identity saying, I'm a chair, and if there's another chair near to me, then invite a human to call his friend and sit down on me. And those strange narrative I just told you will become very common sense when all the objects can be tagged for 1 cent. Right now, it's really expensive to tag objects to be sent by a network. But let me tell you, Walmart use sensor networks to detect which material moves and why and how. Industrial factories use sensors to know what is the movement of merchandise and the movement of people. Cities use them to understand how we waste things. But at some point, the sensor will become poetically amazing potential. Like, there will be an amazing poetic potential to use sensors. And instead of fearing anonymity invasion or privacy invasion, I would prefer to teach the kids that we are entering that world since the 70s. And when they're going to be old enough, I want them to know that they're still in it. Because they won't see it. They won't see the sensor network. It will be so subtle, so deep, so within our body. Like, I don't mean it's going to be a chip. It's just going to be on everything surrounding us. So it's going to be, it's going to be listening to us. And I don't want my kid to not know that and to be like, you know, a naive being. I want him to be super aware that the machine is listening.
Right. It's so fascinating. I mean, there's so much thought and attention gone into this experience. And it's been designed from the get-go as a sort of parent-child shared experience, isn't it? It's an opportunity for the parent to sort of find connection with the child.
Yeah, and he will find connection at many levels. That's why I don't think every parent is the same. I think, like I say, I'm writing a post in Transmedia, and you've been writing a lot about Transmedia, but for me, the real revolution, or the real transcendental revolution of Transmedia is transrational thinking. It means we don't think the same way. Even right now, we have a dialogue. But as I'm talking to you, you're thinking. You're having a dialogue in your head. You're thinking about your next question. You're saying, this guy is crazy. You're.
But I said that a long time ago before I invited you on.
But I've seen parents that tells me, oh, I'm not a good storyteller. And I find that rather sad, because it's a really great connection to have with your kid, that role play part. Because that's how he embraced reality. And that's how you can enter his fantasy and shape his interest and curiosity. And storytelling is not just like multi-platform. It doesn't have to be technology-call wise. Like, the parent doesn't have to have an iPad to use my story. He can just read the book and use the blocks, and it will make sense. That in that sense is Transmedia, because I really didn't want like a product placement kind of project. It was really It was mainly built from the ground to be extremely expensive and pervasive. And I would say that in the stuff I didn't say is, when I built that project, it was crazier than that. I started to think about augmented space, so that the kid would read the book and then read the iPad at the end of the book saying, I'm at this page. So what do you have to tell me, book, at this page? And the iPad would say, well, let me check for something. So the iPad would check, is it full moon? Yes, it's full moon. Is it raining outside? Yes, it's raining outside. Which page are you on? I'm on page 64. Okay, here's your Oracle daily affirmation of the day. And I was so fascinated by this opportunity, this Oracle part of that technology, that I wanted to create augmented space where you would be able to bring your mobile or your iPad and have a physical interaction with your environment. If you were in a story, for example, that I'm at the page 64 of that book, and I did this unlocking of the – I played with that instrument, and I also played with that instrument on full moon, so I unlocked something special. if I go in a physical location, let's say a museum, and the museum is works you are ready, something in the museum will change. The light will be triggered, or the sound, the sonorization of the space would change. There would be a projection. So that was the initial vision. And I tried to pitch that for 8 years, like involving augmented space, music shows, a collection of masks and amulets that would trigger projection, connected toys with RFID and Bluetooth. I was like so mixing up things. At some point, people were just like, I don't understand your project.
So there's just too much going on, you mean? Like they're kind of...
Well, even now, I think that the campaign is doing really well, but that's why I'm doing a podcast with you. It's like to demystify my intention and to try to decomplexify maybe what people see as a complex project. It's basically a very natural fit to have a physical book with physical tiles or physical amulets or masks that are reacting to an iPad app. And the three of them are in an ecosystem. They're not fighting each other. They're not one that has a story that is so different than the other. It's just going to be always different. It's almost like a mysterious experience where you, for example, people were asking me, but why an app for children? Oh, it's not going to be an app on the App Store where you download the app and then it asks you to pay $1 every time you want to add a sheep or a pig on your farm. Like, it's going to be an app that after 1 year of play will shut itself down for 24 hours. So some people would say, it's anti-commercial. Yeah, it's for the kid. I'm doing it for the kid. So I don't want my kid to play 2 hours on my iPad because she becomes a zombie. It's worse as TV. So I want my kid to play on the iPad, develop his memory, concentration, gestural intelligence. But I also want the software to tell her, now it's time to go play. I'm now shutting down myself. Bye. And to have this natural teaching to the child that you are in control. Hey, kid, you are in control, and now it's time to go play physically, you know?
Really good. No, it's really not. I think it's really not. And I think that, I mean, you've gone into a lot of detail about the app because that's like the audience that we have for this podcast. But if you just looked at, like, quote, a regular family, one that's not like a transmedia ready family, it's still like a story at bedtime, isn't it? It's still, you sit down and you open the book and you go through this. But I've seen a lot of parents or adults, and they don't feel comfortable doing the role play or the storytelling. So, for example, I've seen parents play with cards with the kids, and the kids are rolling these cars around like a garage or somewhere, and they're inventing this story world. And the parents are kind of like, or the adults that I've seen play, are like hopeless at actually saying anything about, you know, who might be in the car or where might the car be going. And
I hear you, but let me tell you. For example, everybody likes to imitate a bear. Everybody likes to imitate an animal sound if they're just allowed to do it. So imagine you're watching your kid, you're reading a book, and you arrive at a page where there's a fox meeting a big bear.
Yeah.
And in the iPad, you have to make the bear, because the bear will actually come and lick your screen, or, you know, there will be something because it knows that you're at that page. So there will be an interaction in the iPad, very subtle, and the parent... only role is to make that bear afraid so he leaves. So the parents, it's not really storytelling, it's more interacting. At some point, he will just say like, "Rawr!" And then the bear will just leave. And he actually participated in that little storyline without being character driven. But interaction are as important as story. Like the usage will really give meaning to the parent. Some people will really begin as beginners, you know, I'm not a storyteller. Yeah, it's okay. Interactions are made to be there. You're going to have to wave. You're going to have to make a gesture, and you're going to have to cry like a wolf or a hole or a cat to make things happen. So you're going to just have to role play with little funny sounds with your kid, and your kid will laugh because he will hear your voice trying to imitate a cat. What? What is that? Is this a cat, Dad? Is that a cat?
Exactly. But that's what I think is good about it, because you're giving the provocations to the parents. So, like, you're enabling them to get closer to the child without, you know, feeling like, oh, I don't know what to say. Well, the app is, and the book is giving them an excuse.
I like it.
Giving them a cue.
Yeah, I like the idea that you use provocation or disruption. I like the idea that Storytime Reinvented is really that I saw a lot of parents that were not confident or...
Yes.
And I want that tool is really to give confidence to parents. It gives them tools and almost like a guided tools. You know, it's a software in that. So it's listening to your it's listening to the way you tell stories. It's adapting to your voice and your tone and your rhythm. So nobody will tell a story exactly different, and nobody will exactly have the same soundtrack, which is the interesting part. If you read fast, maybe the software itself will say, slow down, please. Just tell that story slower. And it will actually accompany, like a companion for a storyteller. And help, for example, when my kid, I ask her every time, what did you dream about this morning? You know? So there's always the bedtime story, but there's also the wake-up stories. And the app will be subtly built around that. So waking up selves and sleeping selves. You know that maybe 200 years ago, and even when Léonard de Vinci was alive, we were polyphonic, so it means we had about 2, 3, 4 types of sleep in the day.
Oh.
So I don't know if this affected my thinking about this, but when I'm waking up, I'm actually re-entering reality, and when I'm sleeping down, there's a kind of shutdown, and it's really important for the kid to understand that this shutdown is extremely interesting. Like, a lot of kids fight sleeping.
Right.
So this bedtime storytelling is really important, not to excite the children, but rather bring him in the dream states. So he's going he's going deeper and going clean his brain. So tomorrow we reboot, and when we reboot, we are ready for a new day. But that little continuum is really linked to the story line of Wuxia, which is about the sensor age. It's like, sense yourself, get in yourself. Listen to your body. Listen to nature. Do you see the stars? Because right now in cities, most people don't see the star. But in the 18th century, we could see the Milky Way. Everybody was seeing the Milky Way. Now my kid doesn't see the Milky Way. It disappeared. We see smog now. So, like those, for example, you go outside, you take your iPad with you, and I'm going to show you everything that disappeared. Everything. And in real time, my idea is to map the disappearing nature. I don't want my kid to forget. I want my kid to remember that every day there's 10 languages that disappear on Earth. There's 5 species that disappear on Earth. Every day climate change that and that. But instead of going dramatic and horrific, I want to show them that it's part of the story and that they have to cope with it, and they have to be imaginative with it, and they have to dream about the next step.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Jonathan, let me ask you about like how you've brought together the story design with the interaction design.
Yeah.
Like how have you, like where did you start, like, and how did you sort of synchronize the two?
I'm a UX designer by practice. I sketch a lot. So I would say that my first initiative was a very detailed sketch of what would be the initial intro screen of that experience. Like what would happen when I opened that iPad app? Like, I was not focusing on the book that much, because the story were written through a dream recollection. And then the story design process was this following. I sent my sketch, my stories to an illustrator at Ubisoft, Stéphane Surgeon. And he was so inspired that in 2-3 days, he sent me amazing prints of, like, his depiction of my dreams. He said, like, this is your dream. This is what I see. And I said, well, like, this is amazing.
That's really good.
That's actually the image we use in the film. And there is 64 tales, you know. So he did 4 images in about 2 days, and it drove us away for about 5 years surfing on those images and improving other sketch. But I didn't want to go too much in the illustrative part because I knew that the story would change based on my dreams following the reading. So I would write something, go to dream, a week later do a sketch, send it to Stefan. He would do an amazing portrait of like my dream. And then I would go back to my my sketching board. But it was really not the best writer process. It was extremely prosaic, almost kaleidoscopic process, which means so because that was no dream. After 5 years, I finished the 64 tales, and then I started to sketch the Tonally. The Tonally is the iPad app.
Yes.
So I have some sketch on my site, wuxia.ca. I don't know if you can watch as I talk. It's very hard, actually, to talk about an interface without seeing it. But the process was the following. Is I wanted the app to be a parallax storytelling engine. So, of course, there was just a moment. I'm trying to log on my site.
Where should we tell the listener to go to? Because I can see the I'll put the link wuxia.ca in the thing, and I've got the Tonally game. I'm on the iPad app
but
page.
I have a great story about this one. 2006, I meet Katharina Bird, which is a producer. Just before I met Vincent at Saga in 2012, in 2007 I met this other producer that listened to my story of Wuxia. She finds I'm crazy, I'm way too early, people won't understand. But she's doing a project on Lost River in the World. And she sees that my app that thinking of my app, she sees my sketch. My sketch is basically a lunar stone, like in the old mythology of the Indian Hopis.
Yeah.
That you spin around on your iPad. So basically I say you take your iPad and you spin it out. Instead of spinning, like you physically spin the iPad. So people laugh. They find it's an interesting interaction. It has nothing about gestural or any. You don't have to program anything. It's just like you spin the iPad and the iPad talks. And it's a funny part because when I say that, everything started with that little swirl thing, like spin the lunar stone and let it tell you what to do. So there was an oracle feel to it. And then I went into... I want to tell a story as soon as people spin that lunar storm. I want people to fall into a story map. So what is a story map? Is you got 64 tales that are like, you know what a parallax is?
Yeah.
So imagine you got all your story laterally displayed, but you're only focusing on one frame. So when you arrive in the iPad, you're on the frame one of 2004. And you see a little fox sleeping with a fire. Behind him, there's a forest. And sometime when you open the app, just a moment, I'm just going to open that in 2 seconds. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, so... when you open the app is showing you Wuxia sleeping. It's like the first scene of the tale. It's a little fox that just escaped a very big horrific army attack. He's sleeping in a forest. In the background, there's the full moon over a forest, and there's the ocean coast or some kind of water hitting the coast near the forest. And all these sketches are on my site. The kid can wake up the fox by gently sweeping or singing a song that he recognized. Then the fox wakes up. But if the kid take his finger and go up the trees, he discover at the top of the trees that he can see Aurora Borealis.
Oh, yeah. Or, the Northern Lights.
Yeah. Sometimes they are there. So if they are there, he can play music with them. There's a harp based on Aurora Borealis. If he goes down, then he goes into the conveyor belt, into the oceanic current, and he's going into the magnetosphere. There's another instrument in the bottom of the earth, so he can play music there. But in the middle of the scene, if he stays focused on the Wuxia and he clicks on it and he wakes up Wuxia, Wuxia has an ocarina on his neck.
Okay.
And this little ocarina is basically how you call the stories. So there will be different ways to call the stories. You can call them by music, by different types of tones, by different types of names, by gesture. You know, I'm going to invent 64 ways to unlock every story. Every story will not open the same way.
Wow.
It's just to practice the child to learn, you know, all those aspects of his intelligence. You know, sketch, you have to sketch a mountain. And then you have to, it has to rain. You cannot read that tale today. You can only read this story when it rains.
That's interesting.
I want to keep that kind of mystery feeling so that the kid develop a real relationship to what it could be, because there will be a kind of premise with a little image. And the kid, if it's not the time to read this one, he will actually might develop a skills to tell him himself, which I've seen a lot in my kid. So sometimes she will just stop me and say, oh, no, the cat doesn't do that. The cat does that. And this is where the fun part, because I think the app ultimately will evolve into a more collaborative creation where the kid can actually give his own name to the characters and make some interesting relationship with them. So far, I'm really focusing on my own story world, but I really love the idea of a shared story world. So maybe different families meeting together in that world.
Very good.
Like, for example, my kid meets another kid and they all read the same story. It happens for Disney films. They say, have you seen Cendrillon? So they play Cendrillon together and they have an amazing role play because they were both in the story world. But in that case, it would be more like their own character. And they would be actually able, like in a game on PlayStation, when you meet your friend for a game, they would already follow the character of their friend because it's in the story already.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Jonathan, I'm going to wrap up the podcast now because we've run out of time. It's been amazing listening to all these different ideas. What should people do? Where should they go?
Okay, so we have a Kickstarter campaign. It's called Wuxia the Fox Augmented Book iPad App. We are funded at 10% now, so it's the third day. So basically, we've reached the first degree of our network right now. That's why the interesting part is really reaching out new networks, new institutions, people interested in reading, museum, libraries, schools, teachers, parents. So I'm trying to reach in new networks, maybe outside of my geek networks, and I hope to raise $64,000 in the next 27 days. So big challenge, but I'm looking ahead to make it.
Exactly, yeah, and I hope we can give you a lot of support in getting there, Jonathan. I think it's a fantastic project that, you know, I really want to see it come out and come to fruition. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.